This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Now, a talk with retired Marine General Anthony Zinni, the author of a new book called The Battle for Peace. Zinni is extremely critical of how the Bush administration took the country to war in Iraq. Even so, he supports keeping U.S. forces there and completing the mission. From the mid-1990s until the year 2000, Zinni was first deputy commander and then commander-in-chief of CENTCOM, the command that's responsible for Iraq. And that was near the end of a military career that began in Vietnam. At CENTCOM, General Zinni enforced the military sanctions against Iraq, and he says they were working. As the U.S. prepared to go to war in Iraq, he was still seeing intelligence reports that he says did not add up to an imminent threat. According to General Zinni, going to war distracted the country from fighting al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. Tony Zinni has made no secret that he thinks Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld should be fired for two reasons.
One is a matter of accountability. The second is, in order to move forward with a new face, not find ourselves constantly defending the past, not bringing with us whatever baggage comes with the past decisions that were made and the mistakes that were made, to show it's a fresh start, that they're open to new ideas. I think that's necessary. I have nothing personal against Secretary Rumsfeld.
You're saying it's a distraction, you're saying, for him to still be Secretary
of Defense? It is a distraction, and the constant issues of no one being held accountable. Everybody gets a Medal of Freedom. Everybody goes home. It's stuff happens, fog of friction of war. When many people believe, me included, that it's much more serious than that. These were decisions based on negligence. We have to question the competences decisions, the advice that was taken and available and not taken. So I think there has to be accountability. But that's my view. I'm not on any campaign or calling for anything. I was asked my opinion, and I gave it. That decision belongs to the president.
But you're talking about the decisions prior to entering the war in Iraq.
And the first decisions in the beginning of it, disbanding the army, the debathification, the attempt to impose the exiles in leadership positions that were not credible or acceptable, and on and on and on.
It's not just Donald Rumsfeld who was involved in all that.
No.
He's not the only person.
Of course not. You know, I think many of the people that were are long since gone. I mean, that have been moved. There are others that may still be there.
To put it mildly, that has not been the rule in Iraq. Mistakes were made, it is said, and Secretary of State Rice just said it the other day. But there don't seem to be people getting fired for having made those mistakes.
Well, what bothers me about the secretary, and by the way, I certainly respect her, and this is not meant to in any way degrade her credibility and her performance, but she said tactical mistakes. Mm-hmm. You know, there were strategic mistakes, significant mistakes of policy made back here. To say tactical mistakes is to imply they were all out there, done by others, that there were no strategic mistakes. I think she said something to the effect that history will judge that the strategic decisions were right. Well, you know, I seriously question that in terms of the planning. And it seems to be denial when you don't admit to mistakes made at the level here in this town, in Washington.
Right now, I don't hear you joining the, let's say we'll be out within a year or set a deadline to our presence in Iraq camp. You're saying we have to stay there.
Right.
You've written in your book about some of the similarities and differences between what you experienced as a young Marine in Vietnam and what's going on in Iraq right now. What ultimately is the difference between the argument today that if we pull out of Iraq rapidly, there could be terrible consequences for the region, and the arguments that were made, say, in 1968, that there would be consequences which were pretty close to what we in fact saw in 5 years and 20,000 American lives later in 1973 when we finally got out?
Well, I think there's one big difference. I think by the time we drew toward the end of our involvement in Vietnam, we began to realize dominoes wouldn't fall. And I think there may have been a realization that if we leave, you know, obviously there are immediate downsides to that, but in the long term, it isn't going to affect our survival. It isn't going to affect our security interests. It isn't going to change us much in the end, except for all, obviously, the psychological and other reasons for our commitment over the long term.
Although one could say that we knew that as well in 1968 as we knew it by the end. And then we spent 5 years not wanting to leave precipitously. I mean, I understand generals don't like to leave wars precipitously.
Absolutely. Neither do sergeants. You know.
It goes against the grain of people in uniform. You're confident that we're not making that mistake right now in thinking that we can get things done because we'd like to see them get
well,
done.
Well, to sort of flip that coin around, this is a much different situation in that a precipitous withdrawal from this place will create repercussions on us that are much greater than Vietnam. The world has changed. This region is different. The impact and the effect of this on other issues in the region are much greater. But I would say something else. It's very important to say, since I've been a critic of all this, this is not lost yet. This is certainly salvageable, more than salvageable.
Why is Iraq of greater strategic consequence to us than, say, Vietnam in the 1960s?
It sits in the center of a world, the Islamic world, that's in turmoil right now and could explode. The explosion will be felt globally. It sits in the middle of a part of the world that provides 70% of the world's oil, probably about half of the world's natural gas. The economy runs on that. It sits on the part of the world that has all sorts of volatile issues around it, that any one of those could be exacerbated or explode as a result of this, almost a chain reaction. We could create in here, if we leave, another sanctuary, Afghanistan-like, where terrorists can operate from. Now they're in the core and the center and the heart of the Middle East. If you just look at your geography, it sits astride all the major trade routes and routes of communication, air, sea, and land that go through it. You know, so there's all sorts of economic, political, and security considerations that make it much more dangerous.
You urge us around the world in our policies to help foster developments in countries that counter destabilization. Right. I mean, it's a measured statement of what we should be helping countries to do. The president has very unmeasured statements about we should be bringing democracy to the world. Is his aim exaggerated, and is it going to get us into trouble? Should we be in favor of a stable Iraq that we might not recognize as a democratic one?
Well, I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I mean, I would just say that this idea that it's all a matter of bringing democracy is insufficient. Changing political systems and adding some sort of democratic element to them, whether it's pure democracy or it's something that we would recognize as reasonable representative government, is good and positive. Mm-hmm. We can't create everything in our image. It's impossible and maybe culturally not possible. But that's only a small part of it. That's the political side of it. There has to be economic development. There has to be a social change and reform. There has to be humanitarian considerations, the building of institutions to cope with hostile environments. You can't just fairy dust democracy and see that as a solution to everything. Worse yet, you can't say democracy equals elections or elections equal right. democracy. It's not that simple.
But you're getting more ambitious as you spell out what has to be done in these countries. You're talking about things that will unfold over decades, I assume.
Absolutely. And it is always more costly to deal with the crisis than it is to invest in the prevention. What can we do to help build institutions in unstable parts of the world that haven't yet erupted in the crisis that we might make a difference? Could we empower local political organizations? Could we help the African Union, the United Nations, the Gulf Cooperation Council to handle their own problems with us in support? We need to pool our resources and take an international approach to this. And as the sole remaining superpower, the leadership role of this falls to us. This is not out of altruism. This is not becoming the world's policeman. This is out of necessity right now.
One last short answer question. If nominated, would you run? And if elected, would you serve?
No and no.
Thank you very much, General Anthony Zinni.
Thank you.
General Zinni, a former head of U.S. Central Command, his latest book is The Battle for Peace, a frontline vision of America's power and purpose. And there's an excerpt from it at our website, npr.org.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.